there. This is Positive Outcomes, a podcast for the P&O community. Thanks again for joining us today. My name is Jeff Newell, the host of this episode. Today we have Mike Amrich of Steeper USA, and we're going to be discussing matching the right transhumeral device for your patient's goals and needs. Mike is a certified prosthetist with over 40 years upper extremity experience. He is currently the clinical specialist at Steeper in USA. Thanks again, Mike, for joining us today.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm really glad to just get a chance to talk about the Spire elbow and prosthetics and upper limbs. So thank you, Jeff.
Yeah, and prosthetics has gone quite a long way in the last 5-10 years. You know, it's elevated to what is available for the patient to help them out to be part of the community again.
Yeah, I agree. I often, kind of when I'm explaining how much has changed, I think of like an old flip phone and how, some people here might not even know what that even is, but it was early technology and mobile phone devices. And think of what we have now as far as the smartphones and the ability to access all kinds of information. And I feel like that's the case with upper limb prosthetics, just the ability to access information and technology and other manufacturers' components in order to kind of design and create a great blueprint for upper limb end users. Yeah.
And it's kind of neat that all the manufacturers seem to be all on the same page where you can mix and match different components and they're all compatible.
I think so too. I really think we are playing together well. And we all realize that the choice is ultimately the prosthetist and the end user, and that we just are a participant in that and hopefully just able to provide something that lets them, as you say, get back into the community and doing things that they like to do at whatever it is that they're looking to get out of this device.
Mm-hmm. And when I'm out and about and visiting hospitals and clinics, it's surprising that what technology they're not aware of, and I think doing these podcasts brings it to their attention and they can see, what is out there. I know we have the internet, but I mean, people get busy. Do they have time to search things out? No. And, this can help quite a bit.
I agree. And I think it works both ways. I think there's a side of it that it may be that you have unrealistic expectations, that you can see something in the media and say that that's, wow, look at how great we are and what technology has to offer. And it does. It really does offer a lot. And as you say, the other side of it is realizing that there is much more in this field that there is to offer. So it's a balance, I think, of kind of creating realistic expectations and also providing an avenue to look at the best technology that's out there.
Yeah, for sure. What should practitioners ask their patients when fitting a new transhumeral device?
That is such a great question. And as a prosthetist, I one of the references I have is thinking of lower limb prosthetics. And in the US, one of the things that's evolved is K levels. And the K level is for lower limb, a way of kind of designing what the patient's ability is and matching the right components for that. There isn't really anything like that for upper limb prosthetics. So it is the value of the question, the developing kind of the right set of answers and questions to kind of decide on what that blueprint is. And I think you start with what their expectations are, what it is they're looking for, what looking at their amputation level and how much range of motion they have, how much tolerance they have, whether they've worn anything before, whether they're looking for something on more of the cosmetic side or more of the functional side, what it is they do around their house or work that they want to try and get back to doing, or what are their functional expectations of this device to create two-handedness, to handle different situations, whether it's as simple as just around the house, cooking and cleaning and just taking care of themselves, or is it higher level of ability to working around the yard, to fishing, to hunting? Is it activity specific? Is cosmesis really important, or is function? Those are some of the things that you want to try and address. And insurance, what is the ability to pay? Who's the payer for this? And what type of funding do they have as well for the cost of the prosthesis?
And that leads me really nicely into my next question is, what does terminal device interchangeability play? One of the things that, we have to realize is devices are a lot of times point specific in that they're set up to do a certain task, a certain procedure. And, you know, this is where interchangeability comes into play.
Boy, it sure does. And I think anybody who's gone through a traumatic injury and loss of a limb, one of the first things that they do want back again is their hand, something that feels and looks like their hand. And in reality, when you're looking at a prosthesis, it really, the design is toward pinch, grasp, and lift. And how do you create that functional coupling that assists the dominant arm? Or is there more involvement? It needs to be something that's providing more of the dominance because there's unilateral or contralateral involvement. But in any case, as you say, interchangeability is such a key factor in the design of upper limb prosthetics at the terminal device. So it might be that a hand is a great tool to be out in a work situation that's more of a white collar situation where you're handling things that are around a desk, it's light duty, and it's meant to be in a very clean, neat environment. Whereas being able to interchange that with a terminal device that has a more robust feature to it that allows the person, the individual to handle heavier duty tasks, to get it wet and dirty and to bang it around a little bit more and to be able to quickly change that, just as we do in our own life settings. We might wear a pair of dress shoes and dress pants as we go to work. As soon as we get home, we get off our dress clothes, we put on work clothes or play clothes to then do a different activity. We wouldn't wear those same clothes in that situation because we know we'd ruin them and it's expensive to wear those and replace them, as it is these devices too.
That's a great comparison. I like that. I'm going to keep that in my back pocket if you don't mind. That's a good one. I like it. Why should someone choose a powered device over a mechanical device or vice versa? What are the advantages? What are the disadvantages?
Yeah, isn't that a great question, Jeff? And isn't it a great kind of process to have and kind of look at with prosthetics and upper limb? And that blueprint, getting that right really does make a difference in the success of somebody using it. Powered limbs have a great advantage in that it's using a muscle signal or a switch, and it's creating from an input point, it's creating through battery a motor-driven event. And that can be at the elbow, and it can be at the terminal device, and it can be at the wrist. And for somebody that maybe has a very short amputation, that's a great one because it allows battery power and a motor to move this versus having to use a harness and a cable and a body powered to move it. On the other hand, body power is very quick and fast and simple and reliable and less weight. It's very durable. And so both of them have great advantages. And it can be that a short amputation, somebody who has limited range of motion in the shoulder, somebody who really needs a powered system to move the arm and position it, is a great sort of successful outcome. Whereas also technology has come so far that in powered systems, you also have the advantage of co-apt, and you have pattern recognition, and you have powered systems that are robust and durable and do provide the freedom of motion. So with a powered system, you now have the ability to move away from your body and out in space, whereas a cable harness system, you're restricted to a range of motion away from the body. So both of them have a really strong outcome success if they're paired with the right combination of expectations and abilities.
Okay. You just mentioned pattern recognition. What are your thoughts on pattern recognition? What role do you think it plays in this? You know, I'm quite familiar with pattern recognition. I've seen great success with it. You know, I've seen where now with these high-tech devices, you know, you have an elbow joint, an electric elbow joint, then you have a wrist rotator, then you have a multi-articulating hand. You know, that can become very cumbersome for a patient just working off a two-site system. So what's your thoughts on that?
I do love the technology. I really do. And I've grown up in this field and followed the early inception of EMG-powered devices. And so you're right. So direct control with a two-site electrode system is very simple in that it's using, say, a bicep to flex the arm and a tricep to extend the arm. It can be used for other joints too. Pattern recognition looks at 8 pairs of electrodes around the whole envelope of the limb, and it looks at some type of pattern that's the same and repeatedly the same that produces a freedom of motion, degree, a range, a position. So in itself, what it does is it allows a little bit better intuitive feeling. It lets somebody look at their entire phantom limb when they're trying to control a motion. And in that way, it's really, really nice. It's not perfect. And there are situations, I'm sure you found it, Jeff, where direct control is still really nice in certain situations, because it just does make sense too. But to have that choice and to have that ability, and now one of the things we're seeing more is TMR, targeted muscle reinnervation, where there are more nerves that are being used as biofeedback into muscle to create more ability for the arm to pick up patterns.
Sure. Okay. What is one of the misconceptions that you've come across would a patient have wearing a transhumeral device to meet their goals? For instance, like an Aspire with weight, battery, durability.
Yeah. I think all of it. As you said, it's a misconception that it's still, and I go back to my dad. I loved when he said, you know, it's not connected to you through your own muscles and nerves and tissue. It's still just a piece of plastic. And as great as technology is, and as much as it has to offer, it's still a device that's connected to your body. And it's not as good a replacement as the limb is that you have, you know, naturally. So as a device and as an external component on your body, if you can look at it that way as an assist to your dominant arm and a way to kind of understand how to use this as a tool, as a mechanical device, that in itself, I think, helps to create realistic expectations with how to use it. It is a learning process. It is something that you have to invest time in to learn and to be better at, as you do with anything in life. I love riding a bike, and I would not have gone out and bought the bike that I own now right away because it didn't make sense. I was just learning to ride a touring bike. And now I've gained experience and I'm a better rider and I've learned, you know, what it is my ability is, and I can kind of match that to what I need. And I am a strong rider. I do put a lot of time in. So the technology of a better bike allows me even more freedom and ability with it. And I think you could look at the same with a prosthesis, any other kind of analogy to golfing. The better you are at it, the better and you are to use the technology that's there.
Yeah. And I've seen it time and time again, Mike. I'll see a patient and you'll go in to discuss things with them and just get an evaluation done. And they want everything. They want an electric elbow. They want a wrist rotator. They want a multi-articulating hand. And that's great. They have great high expectations. But once they get it, then they start to realize, well, this is what I really need. This is what I can deal with as far as weight goes. Or, you know what, if I put a wrist rotator in there, that's going to make my prosthetic side longer than my sound side. You know, so it all comes to play, but you're exactly right. You start at a point and then you move on from there.
Oh, isn't that right? And I'm sure everybody can kind of say the same thing with a new patient. I have a person I'm working with right now, and not only do they want the highest technology for myoelectric COAP, multi-articulating hand system, but they also want to go back to kayaking and to riding a bike and to skiing. And you could almost feed into that and say, okay, so we'll provide you with these seven different devices with all of these different attachments and you have to learn one and you have to kind of go through a process and all of it would just wind up in the closet. So yeah, it's a great one, Jeff.
And you mentioning in the closet, you know, when I used to work way back when technology wasn't what it is today, that's exactly what happened. You know, you'd fabricate a beautiful device, but there's a lot going on. It's a heavy device. And the patients, they start to say, you know what, is it worth it? But with the technology today, now they're starting to see that it is worth it, which is a nice change.
Yeah. No, it is. And in general, the upper limb population is a small subset of the entire community of people with limb loss. And it is more of a specialty. And it takes people like you, Jeff, that can go out and meet with your clients and customers and discuss the technology and discuss the advantages and discuss the pros and cons, and to be able to put your hands on it and look at it and see and compare it to other manufacturers and other components and help in that decision process. I think that's fantastic what you do, Jeff.
Well, you know as well as I do, Mike, this field is a touchy-feely field. You know, we need to touch things. We need to move them. We need to, you know, we need to see them face to face. It's very difficult to make some sort of judgment or assessment looking at it on a screen or a catalog. So you're right. It's nice to get out and be able to give the patients and the process the opportunity to see this new technology face to face.
Yeah, I like that. And you know, I have often thought to myself when I'm first talking and meeting with new patients that who is it that they know that also has an amputation? Who is it in their life that they can relate to, that they can say, oh, I saw this person wearing this and I know what this is like. And that's not usually the case. Mm-hmm. In conversation, if you ask somebody who's gone through an amputation, who it is that they know that they can kind of mentor after and say, they know somebody that's had this, there, it might not be anybody in their life. So you are then the first person in terms of the front runner that can offer them information and knowledge and explanation of what kind of this prosthesis whole situation is going to be like. Yeah.
Okay. What are some of the tips you can give the practitioner could use to ensure the patient that this is the direction to go, or this is where we should change channels?
Yeah. I think, you know, one of the things I think that technology is offering us is the ability to also be able to change and adapt as we're going through this evaluation and discovery process with somebody that we're being fit with, So like with the Aspire, the software allows you the freedom to choose different outcomes with the inputs and the outputs. And you mentioned, Jeff, a wrist rotator, whether or not that's important. And it might be that you decide not to do that. You could simply dial it in the software and change that kind of component's use, just take it out. And you could also go from a two-site input with electrodes to pattern recognition, or to even switches, or to potentiometer, linear transducer. So it is nice to kind of go through several different iterations and trying out and evaluating with a person developing the first time, especially the use of a prosthesis. We offer a demo program and loaner program so that you could try something out, whether it be a highly powered system, the Aspire Pro, or a little bit lighter weight, a little bit less cost, a little bit simpler hybrid system that's still using all the componentry and software, but an electric lock and eliminating that heavy motor. So I think that's really a big thing is to just be flexible and allow yourself the freedom to look at different components. Try not to believe that this design is going to be best suited for everybody. Try and adapt what you're using for each individual and be flexible with how you go about doing it so that you can try out different aspects of what's available in upper limb prosthetics.
Okay, great. And with that, I'd like to thank everybody for tuning in to this episode. I'd like to give a big thank you to Mike from Steeper from joining us and stopping by and chatting with us with some really good knowledge regarding upper extremity prosthetics. Of course, if you have a show or topic for future episodes, you can email us at positiveoutcomes@ortoped.ca. New episodes are released every other Thursday at positiveoutcomes.com. Wherever you get your podcasts. Positive Outcomes is a production of Ortoped ULC in conjunction with our partners, produced by Jonathan Stone and Frederick Solway, and hosted by me, Jeff Newell, and Simon Beals. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, take care and be safe.